How's the sound? Not that I really need this. Okay. Okay. Good morning. How's that? All right. First of all, God is so good. That seems to be just the repeated message without even coordinating all of this. We've had music readings, and hopefully something in this message will speak to someone. So today we're looking at Paul's letter to the church in Philippi. And I love to do a little history lesson because research is kind of my thing. Philippi is in the Macedonian region of Greece, and I think maybe Mike showed us some maps last week that pointed out some of these things. And it was founded roughly 100 years before Paul arrived. Citizens of Philippi were granted the status of Roman citizenry, and some of the benefits of that being that they didn't have to pay taxes, wouldn't that be nice, or worry about protecting their city. The church in Philippi is the first church that Paul planted in Europe around 50 AD. And the first person that was baptized in the church was Lydia. Lydia was described as a worshiper of God and a dealer in purple cloth. Purple cloth was considered a luxury item, so it's possible that Lydia was educated and possibly well-to-do. Wait, what? The first member of the Christian church in Europe was a woman?
Yes.
Her entire household was baptized, so possibly this began as a house church. Note here that the citizens of Philippi did not have to worry or be anxious about anything because they were part of the Roman Empire. We'll come back to that shortly. Now let's look at Paul's background. He was not always the number one advocate for Jesus and the early Christians. He was born Saul of Tarsus in about 5 AD and spent his early years persecuting the Christians. So you might ask, how did the jailer become the jailed? In the area around Jerusalem, as he was on his way to do one of his bad deeds, Jesus appeared to Saul in the form of a very bright light, so bright, in fact, that it left Saul blind. After 3 days, his sight was restored, and Saul became a believer, changed his name and his attitude, and began preaching the Gospels of Jesus. This is what got him in trouble. In those days, the supreme ruler, or the emperor in Rome, didn't want any competition. So when he heard of these early disciples traveling, sharing miracles and the stories of Jesus, the emperor had the disciples jailed so that the people would not hear this good news. The church at Philippi was likely planted or formed during the first of Paul's missionary journeys. This letter, we believe, was written during the second journey. He altogether makes 4 journeys, spent a lot of time traveling. And this letter is written from prison, okay? Now, even though he had some special circumstances, he's still in prison. One of those privileges being that he could send or receive news of his earlier churches and other disciples on the road for the Lord. So Paul received news that things were going well with the church in Philippi, and he is elated. So he sits down to write or dictate a letter to them. He begins the letter by saying, "I thank God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now." Paul is in prison, but even with his special privileges, it's not a fun place to be. And he speaks in the letter of being in chains for God. But in this message, he uses the words joy or rejoice 14 times during this letter. How can Paul be so happy in prison? Paul loves the Lord, so he knows stuff. As we heard earlier, Paul tells the folks in Philippi, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and petition, present your requests to God. And I'll be honest, I chose to speak on this letter because this is probably the very first verse I ever memorized. And it was when my younger child was doing Bible quizzing. I heard this and I was like, pow. So, there you go. So let me say it again for the people in the back. When you hand your worries and troubles over to God, you will have peace of mind. How can Paul, sitting in prison, pen these amazing promises? He believes. He knows that God is good. He knows from personal experience that if you believe, your citizenship in heaven will be guaranteed. And Paul is willing to go to prison and bear the chains in order to speak his truth. But he knows that just as the citizens of Philippi have less worries because they are watched over by Rome, the early Christians will not have worries because they will enjoy the citizenship of heaven. God, through his Son, Jesus Christ, has promised us that. Paul goes on to say that even though he's in prison, he needs nothing. He has learned to be content, whatever the circumstances. And he has learned the secret of being content in any and every situation because he can do everything through God who gives him strength. Wow. Okay, those of us who are gathered here today, we're all believers. Yet we have just been through a pandemic where, although we weren't in prison, many of us didn't leave our houses for months. Raise your hand if you think you could have written a letter with the word joy or rejoice used 14 times and that you kept a positive outlook and spirit through that, even though we believe, we know. In this type of prison that we were in, we couldn't see our loved ones. We couldn't travel. We couldn't gather in community to worship, exercise, or even have a meal. And we were so bombarded with conflicting news and social media reports that I know, at least speaking for myself, I spent the last year really confused. And for a lot of us, this pandemic was an inconvenience. Or was it? Let's rejoice and count our blessings and review some of the things that we may have learned in the last 16 months. We've learned how to continue in community virtually. We've learned that technology can be a gift. We've learned to use Zoom, Google, Facebook, Microsoft Teams. We've learned that even if you do not cook, you can eat well thanks to DoorDash, Uber Eats, Home Chef, etc. And this has helped to keep some of our favorite restaurants open. It's provided jobs for the people who prepare the food, for the delivery drivers, for farmers who are still growing. And so we've also learned that you can get almost anything you need within 48 hours by clicking a couple of buttons on your Amazon app. We've learned that we can take classes and attend school and exercise via the magic of Zoom. And although it's not the same, we were able to continue. We may have spent more time with our immediate families. We gathered virtually for Bible studies and sometimes just to chat during the week. I've really enjoyed these gatherings, and I feel that we were able to stay connected even if we could not gather in person. And it didn't take as long as some of Paul's letters where somebody had to actually walk to the next town to deliver the message. We could pretty much connect instantaneously. And some of us have learned new skills, and some of those skills have blossomed into small businesses. So overall, there's a lot to be thankful for, even though it was an inconvenience. Now, Some of us experienced anxiety during the pandemic, and it's only natural due to all the uncertainty that we were bombarded with. And although Paul says, do not be anxious about anything, Paul did not have a smartphone feeding him conflicting information 24/7. And really, was our anxiety new, or did we only notice it more when we had the time to slow down? We can pick up our Bible and remind ourselves not to worry. There is good news between those covers. And the Bible actually addresses anxiety in a lot of other books, too. I got a couple here. Psalm 34 says, I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Psalm 56, when I am afraid, I will trust in you, in God, whose word I praise, in God, who I trust. I will not be afraid. What can mortal man do to me? 1 Peter 5 tells us, cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. And this is just a sample. God knew that we were wired for anxiety, and he loves us. So he addressed that. Now, some of you may remember I was actually scheduled to do this sermon 3 or 4 weeks ago, but in his timing, God had another plan for me. And I was supposed to speak on Pentecost Sunday, and so the wrap-up of the sermon was going to be, you know, what do we embrace in Pentecost and all that, but that didn't happen. So when I was talking to Rob, he says, well, what do you embrace now? It's June. I embrace Pride Month, a month during which we celebrate the fact that although we do not all think, act, or love alike, we can care for and respect each other as we have learned throughout our lives because of our relationship with Christ. God created us as a diverse people, so he taught us to love and respect each other. As most of you know, I have close personal ties to the LGBTQ community, and I am using this month as an opportunity to read, to listen, and to learn. Earlier this week, I was multitasking and heard something on the news, and this is probably the statement that has struck me the hardest. I wish I'd written down who said it, but I didn't. I believe it's one of the local leaders in the LGBTQ community. And he stated that the members of this community would prefer that rather than celebrate diversity, we practice inclusivity. Why celebrate our differences? And why keep the celebrations of sharing of knowledge to just 1 month? And of course, our friend Paul had something to say about this in some of his letters too. In his letter to the Colossians, we read, so as those who have been chosen by God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, and forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave, so also should you. And from the letter to the Galatians, there is neither Jew nor Gentile, slave nor free, nor is there male or female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. So Paul, of course, focused mainly here on religious differences because that is what affected him most closely. But I believe these principles can and should apply to all persons everywhere. We can also rejoice as we finally appear to be on the other side of the pandemic. Churches are open. Schools will be open in the fall. Those of you who are parents and grandparents are probably going, yeah. We are once again able to safely gather and hug our friends. And I missed hugging. I've missed being out in public. As most of you know, I am not an introvert. I have been working from home for 16 months, and it's been darn lonely. So I'm glad to be out in public again. However, let us not lose our connections that we have made or intensified during our time of quarantine. Let us respect and continue to include virtually those who are not ready for the new normal. But mostly, let us celebrate this day that the Lord has made, rejoice, and be glad in it.